Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only. Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Guys, welcome back, episode 12. So, you know, today we're going to be talking about some really interesting things. As always, of course, we try our best, you know. How's it going, Lash?
What's going on, man? How are you?
What's going on? You got the hiccups over there?
No, we're good. So, for this episode, we'll be going over the weeks of May 19th through the 25th. It was an interesting week for both of our teams. All three teams, to be honest with you. But there's two teams that we'd like to talk about. They're up and coming and doing really, really well. So it's a lot of stuff to get to.
So I heard what you said. You said you were, you know, three teams. So now we all know you're a real heavy, diehard Baltimore Orioles fan. I'm a Mets fan, unfortunately, around this time of year. And we're going to be bringing up the Kansas City Royals. Amazing. They're doing really well. This is a team that won 56 games last year. And they pretty much have the same roster. And, you know, they spent $110 million during the offseason. And that $110 million has gone really far. But today's episode, before we get into that, is going to be based on Mr. Ohtani. And we're not talking about interpreters or anything like that. We're talking about what he's doing as a DH for the Dodgers. All right. You have to understand this guy's recovering from Tommy John. He's not pitching this year. And he's showing us why he's so great. And, you know, the question is, will he ever pitch again? All right. You have to understand that two-way players, you know, they have to go through a lot more than the average baseball player. You know, they have to prepare for the week in the rotation. That's every 4 days. They have to prepare for that. They have to be able to hit as well and be productive. But Mr. Ohtani is a different type of caliber player, right? He's producing really well at the plate. He's number one in the National League in home runs. He's hitting for average. Not only is he hitting for average, he's 11 out of 11 in stolen bases, all right? So are we looking at a triple crown player right now? Is he showing us a different side of what he can really do? And this is why we're talking about him today, because we feel like the Dodgers are going to have to, you know, really sit down on the table and figure out whether or not Ohtani should be pitching at all. Being that, you know, he's such a great hitter and he's producing amazing numbers, and he just might, you know, he's in the pace for a triple crown. What do you think about those thoughts, Lasha?
No, he's a generational talent. To see, have someone that is doing this well after touring his after having to get Tommy John surgery, this is probably the best outcome that you could have asked for when you're the team like the Dodgers after you gave him all that money. You know, if he wasn't not a two-way player and he had to get Tommy John surgery, I think they still would have given him a contract, but the amount of money that they gave him would have been less, because essentially you losing the year of service if he just only pitched. The thing that's surprising me about Otani is his stolen base. He's 11th or 12th for 12 on the base pass, which is crazy because, you know, he's a tall, lengthy guy, and there's not too many tall athletes that can run that fast. L.A. De La Cruz is another guy who's around his height, maybe about the same height as Otani, maybe a little shorter, and he's pretty fast too, so it's pretty impressive. But it's more impressive for Otani because he's a pitcher, and he, you know, the way he, you know, if you look at him, you just think he's just a slow guy, but he's not. And he's performing. He's probably going to win that Triple Crown, like you said. Our good friend Ronald Acuña just got hurt recently, so he's out for the year. So that's one less player he's competing for that Triple Crown. But we shall see what happens, and it's exciting. And he's the main reason why the Dodgers are winning. He's the big contributor. When he gets on base, it puts more pressure on the other teams, you know?
Yeah, I agree. It's funny because, you know, we haven't had a lot of two-way players in the league, you know, in our century. And, you know, Babe Ruth was an amazing two-way player, but Babe Ruth said a lot of important things. You know, when he was interviewed eons ago, he used to say that being a two-way player was really hard, especially, you know, as you went along and you aged in the league. And he wanted to play every day, and he knew that, you know, it would take a toll on his body. And he would refuse to pitch in long stretches. And it's because, you know, it takes a lot out of your body. It takes a lot out of you to be able to produce like that, be able to, you know, go out there and have a really great game and be able to hit as well, you know. So you have to kind of like pick and choose, you know. And this is Babe Ruth was an amazing player. You have to understand that, you know, he's saying that, you know, and he said it back in the day. I know, you know, you have different ways of, you know, preparing yourself now. You know, you have strength conditioning and all that stuff. And, you know, they're keeping an eye on you and they make sure that you're prepared for it. But like I said, there's not a lot of two-way players out there. So, you know, these coaches and these guys that help you train, you know, don't really know how to get it together. You know, they don't know how you're feeling. You know, when you're competitive and you're a player, you're going to always say, I can do it. I can do it. You know, but being that Otani hasn't pitched at all this year, you can see the numbers rise. You can see the difference between his batting and pitching. You know, when he was doing both, yeah, he was still great, granted, but it's a different type of situation now. Like, you can really see the numbers move in the right direction this year, being that he's only focused on batting, you know? And he's a true DH, you know? He's a true DH. He's the guy that you want on your team if you want to win a game, you know? Ever since the National League let go of the ninth slot for DH, and it shows, you know? It makes a big difference in the game, you know? The ninth slot in the National League for years was pretty much an automatic out, if you think about it. Not anymore, you know? Makes the game a little bit more exciting, and I can see Otani going in the right direction. But if a player like Ruth back in the day said, you know what, it took a toll on my body as I got older, and, you know, it's not something that he was really interested in, even though he could do it really well, then the Dodgers have a lot to think about. And I can't wait. You know, he's recovering from the surgery. He's been throwing lately, right? He's been throwing from 60 feet, I believe, last week, right? He's throwing 60 to 70 pitches, and he's throwing around 80 miles per hour at this point. So, you know, it looks like the surgery went really well. Now, it's up to the Dodgers, being that, you know, this is his first year there, whether or not they're going to allow him to pitch. You know, we saw Paul Skeens come up not too long ago, and he was a two-way player in college, and he was doing both really well. But, you know, he came up, and right now the Pirates have him focused on pitching. And I don't think they're going to allow him to hit. So it shows that, you know, the two-way player is a very interesting type of high-caliber player that maybe a lot of teams that, you know, invest in you don't want to really see you do. You know, they don't want to see you do that. They want to make sure that, you know, you're able to contribute to the team to the fullest of your capacity, you know. But in Ohtani's case, yeah, he can go out there and pitch every 4 days, 5 days and be competitive. But I think we're getting better numbers from him just batting, you know.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like I said, I think it's amazing. It's just amazing because we don't see too many two-way players anymore in the league. But the problem is if we start allowing everyone to do it, it's no longer going to be special. And then we're like, oh, well, everyone can do it now. It's just like how everyone can – it's like in basketball, how everyone can shoot a three, where before centers couldn't shoot a three. Now everyone can shoot a three.
Yeah, you're right.
So it's no longer exciting. You know, it gets boring after a while. So, yeah, it's great to have Ohtani be a multi-positional player and, you know, he's successful. But the problem is you asked earlier whether he'll ever stop. Will the Dodgers stop him from pitching and just have him on a DH? My thing is he's so young. I think when he gets maybe, you know, when they start to realize, like, his velocity is down and everything, they might say, okay, man, let's give up the pitching, stick with the DH, and kind of like J.D. Martinez where you just only hit, which will be great. He's doing it right now, so – and he doesn't play the field, so you don't lose anything. You essentially gain just a power bat. So I think I wouldn't pull the plug on his pitching yet. Now, if he has to get another Tommy John surgery next year or whenever, years down the road, then maybe I'd be like, yeah, this is twice you've got to go through. You know, let's say he comes back next year and his velocity has dipped and his locating the ball is not as good as it was before. Then they might say, well, we gave you all that money. What do you think about just DHing? You know, who knows? Maybe he'll just do that. But they're going to have no choice because they gave him so much money. They can't just give up on him. So I don't think they're going to have him give up pitching yet.
Yeah, you're right. I heard what you said, right? And I'm going to uncover it. So basically you said that the reason why he got a $700 million contract is because of the fact that he's a two-way player, you know, because he's doing so much, you know, and he can contribute so much to a team. Mm-hmm. Now, if he was a regular DH, do you think he would have gotten the same amount of money or it would have been drastically less?
Oh, it would have been drastically less. Look at J.D. Just look at J.D. Martinez. Now, J.D. Martinez is in his 30s, but let's say he would have gotten less because you're essentially a one-dimensional player. You can't even play the field. You only can hit. Why am I going to give someone that much money when you're only batting maybe what? Three times in a game. When you think about it, well, probably four times. Let's just say four times. But average four times a game, there's probably going to be days where you might sit out. I don't know how often that is. Probably less because you're not playing the field as well. But $700 million to hit a ball and not even field, that's an excessive amount of money. So that's the only reason why they gave him that much money. Mm-hmm. And he's a once-in-a-lifetime generational player. And they know, the Dodgers know, they could get that money back in tenfolds with revenues, people coming to the ball game, and you have a whole other country. You have two countries supporting, the U.S. and back home in Japan. So it's like you're like double dipping from both countries. So if he was just a DH, he'll probably get about like $200 million maybe. He was definitely not getting $700
million. $200 million? Wow. I mean, I think he would have got
that's
a lot more.
For
listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In app only.
You're right. It's a lot for DH. But, you know, you compare him to J.D. Martinez. All right, J.D. Martinez in his prime, yeah, amazing, right? And, you know, you could always, you know, put J.D. on first if you have to, but you know, you have Freeman over there with a big contract as well. So Ohtani's never gonna see first base, you know, because for some reason, you know, you always want to throw your DH on first because it's like the easiest base to, you know, transition to, I guess. And I think it's a hard base to play because you're getting a lot of action for nine innings. You know, the play runs through first. So it's funny how you see how Bryce Harper, you know, used to play outfield, right? Right field? Am I correct about that? Right field? And now he's the first baseman.
Bryce Harper, yeah.
Right field, right? And now he's the first baseman because, you know, he's getting older and, you know, they transitioned him to first base. And that's what they usually do with great players that hit the ball really well, you know, these big guys that...
They'll do that with Judge in New York. Yankees are going to do that eventually.
Of course, they have to. It's what they do. You know, we've seen it over the years, you know. Any high caliber player, you know, we're not talking about Mookie Betts, who, you know, at this age, you know, can play any position and play it better than your average player. You know, Mookie Betts can play anything. Mookie Betts could be a catcher next year. He says, "Oh, you want me to play catcher? Sure, I'll figure it out." And he'll be a great catcher. You know, that's what, you know, the Dodgers have a lot of, you know, great players. And it's funny, you know, you see Mookie Betts playing shortstop and you're like, what the hell just happened, right? But it works out really well. And he's not your average shortstop, you know? Listen, if I had to pick between Lindor and Mookie Betts, man, I tell you right now, man, Mookie Betts all the way. At a later age and, you know, in the game as well. You know, it's kind of crazy. I would totally trade Mookie Betts for Lindor any day of the week.
Me too.
And Mookie Betts is not a shortstop, but he is now. You know, he's just adding to his resume. He's the type of player that, you know, says, oh, this is what I have to do to help the team. And he's willing to do it. And not only willing to do it, willing to excel at the position. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's pretty crazy. It's pretty crazy. Like, you know, they have a lot of great stars and a lot of stars that I, you know, cherish and won't forget. You know, I respect a lot of these players. They're classy players. I love a classy player. I hate a player that, you know, is flashy and talks too much, you know. I hate players like that. This is why when, perfect example, I know we're going, you know, on a rant, but when Javi Baez came to the New York Mets, I felt like he was a cancer to the team, you know, because Javi Baez is a very flashy and has a nasty attitude towards the game. And he puts it out there like this is his MO. And he kind of like turned Lindor into that kind of player, you know. And I don't like that because the energy, you know, rubbed off on him. I don't like players like that, you know. I like a classy player, you know, like a David Wright, you know, a Mookie Betts, a Freddie
Freeman. Aaron Judge,
you know, Derek Jeter, you know. These type of players, a Tony Gwynn, you know, like a Gary Carter, you know, like a classy player, you know, that respects the game, respects the fans, and respects, you know, everything about it, you know, like that's my favorite type of player. I can't stand these flashy guys. They upset me, you know. What's the guy that plays for the Marlins?
Chaz Chisholm Jr.
Yes, yeah, exactly. You know, the flashy guy that wears the big chain and, you know, I can't do it. I can't do
Acuna
it.
Acuna is like that too.
Yeah, but Acuna, you know, Acuna isn't so bad, you know. Acuna, you know, he puts it out there, you know. He's stealing, he's hitting, he's making, you know, these amazing catches. I respect Acuna. I think Acuna is going to turn into that player that I like as he gets older. You have to understand a lot of these players, you know, it's funny because, all right, Soto is a flashy guy too, you know. I don't like the way he, you know, he moves when he's at bat. He has a lot of mannerisms that I really don't like, you know. But he's a great player and he knows his worth, you know. But I think Soto, as he gets older, will, you know, turn into Aaron Judge or Derek Jeter, you know. But yeah, Chisholm, Javi Baez, these guys, I don't care for them so much, you know. Machado is another one that I don't really care for.
No, Machado, he was starting to, once he started to become really good in Baltimore, near the end of his career in Baltimore, he started to get really agitated. He was starting fights with people and brawls, and he just, you know, I got tired of the act, and I was sad to see him go, but at the same time, I was happy. I was like, good, we don't have to deal with him. He's less cocky now in San Francisco, in San Diego. I think it's because they got Tatis over there. They got Xander Bogaerts. They did have Soto last year, so a lot of the shine kind of got, you know, divvied up between those three players. But, for some people, it works because that's how they make a name for themselves, and that's how they're known. They're known for their offense, but they're known for their how they are. They're a little more brash. You know, and it works to advantage. It gets them money, and that's what people like. You know, we live in a world where, we want our players' true, authentic, in the moment reaction to a moment in the game. So, like a couple of years ago, when Jose Bautista, the first baseman for the Toronto Blue Jays in the playoffs, I think it was in Texas, hit that massive home run and. He became known for his famous bat flip. You know, even though he was great as a hitter, but he was known for it, and that's what made him great. So that's what made him reputable, you know. So it works. So do I like it? No, but it's good when that player is like that and they're producing and helping the team. It's not good when the player's like that and their team is not producing. So if Lindor was like that and he's not producing, it's gonna look really, really ugly. So for now, it's working. For a Jazz Chisholm. Now, they're not winning Miami, but he's producing. So I guess it kind of works. But if he was, like, struggling at the plate and he was making all these errors in the outfield, no one likes flashiness. It only works when you're producing. You know, there's so when you produce, you can tolerate a lot of BS. Same thing like in football, right? If I got a star athlete who's very controversial off the field, right, but he's producing – you tolerate it. The minute he stops producing, it's like, all right, we're going to put you on the back burner. We don't want to deal with you anymore. So it works. You know, like I said, you got to use it to your advantage. And so far, he's using it. It works. I can't be mad at him. Do I like it? No. But for Javier Baez, it didn't work because ever since he left Chicago, I don't think he was like that in Chicago. It's when he came to the Mets. And ever since he went to Detroit, he's been awful.
Yeah, he's a character, that's for sure. You know, maybe, you know, when he was younger, you know, he would have been a better fit for the Mets. But I didn't like him at all. And it's crazy because, you know, he was selling a lot of jerseys and, you know, he was a threat kind of sort of. And I'm saying he's getting older. So, like, you know, he hits the ball well. You know, he's great defensively, but his attitude sucks. And I don't like a player like that on my team personally. That's just me. I'm old school, and I like these classy old school players. You know, they go out there, they perform, and they do their thing, and they don't have a chip on their shoulder, you know?
No, definitely. So, speaking of Javier Baez, he used to play on your favorite team, the New York Mets. So with that being said, man, since you're the Mets beat writer, I'd like to call you, reporter. What's going on in Flushing, man? I'm the guy that sticks out the most to me besides the offense, pitching wise, is Edwin Diaz, man. He's been so good, and ever since, man, since he's came back, he's like kind of like a deer in the headlights out there. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I can't understand it either. It's you know, I like Diaz, you know, so it bothers me in a way. I'm sentimental towards him, you know, because you know he was a great closer for Seattle, you know. He had the most saves that year. I believe it was something crazy like 76 or something like that. That's pretty insane for a closer in Seattle. So that means there were a lot of close games, and he came in and he was lights out. And he comes to New York, and, you know, his first year there wasn't so great. I remember being at a lot of games and seeing him underperform and struggle. Then, you know, during the offseason, he spoke to Pedro Martinez, and I feel like that helped him a lot, and Pedro helped him figure it out. And after that, he was lights out. Then, you know, the World Baseball Classic came around, and, you know, that's another subject for a later day. And we all feel, you know, that when you go into the baseball classic and you're competing really hard like that, and you know, you have a great win, it's time to celebrate. But look what a celebration cost him, you know, a whole year of baseball, right? So he comes back this year and everybody's happy. We're like, all right, now we have our closer back. You know, he's a big name in the ball club and he's really struggling. He can't figure it out. He's getting hit. It's like batting practice for the opposing team at this point. And he's really struggling. You know, he cried the other day after, you know, the game was over because he knows that he's not producing for his team and he really cares. You can tell he really cares, you know. And it bothers me, you know. I want him to succeed. I want him to be the best player he possibly can, you know. I like seeing the game through his eyes, you know. He has a specific job, and right now at the moment he's unable to, you know, fulfill. But that's not the problem, you know. The problem is that we're not hitting, and the pitching was really good, and we have, you know, We at the beginning of the year, everybody said the pitching was trash and our hitting was where it was at. It's the complete opposite. The pitching is way better than the hitting. We're not producing runs. We're not staying in games because the pitching is keeping us in games, but we're not able to produce. So one run or two runs from the opposing team is causing us to lose the game. Look, we keep falling deeper into the hole. The Guardians came in and we got swept, right? Then We lost 2 out of 3 to the Giants. I don't know what to say right now. And we're 15 games back. You know, Miami's on our tail, and Miami is, you know, they're sellers already. They gave up, you know, their best player. And I don't know if Miami is able to climb over us and we end up at the bottom of the pile. It shows you that something's wrong. And I feel like we're not doing anything to fix it at this moment. Like, for some reason, you know, when I read the articles in the paper and I read, you know, these ESPN reports and all this stuff, they still think the Mets have a chance, you know, because it's a really good ball club. But for some reason, we cannot figure it out. You know, I think it all started when we lost Francisco Alvarez. For some reason, after that, it all went to, you know, crap. But we'll see what happens. We don't have a winning record at home or outside, you know? So, like, we're 11-16 at home. That's horrible. It feels like, you know, opposing teams come to Citi Field and they're better than us there. And then away, we're 11-14. I think it's time for a fire sale.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Total, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
To be honest with you, you know? The dynamic of the team has changed, and I feel like there's a new core there, you know. I think we should keep all the young puppies there and build around that, you know. Let's get rid of Alonso, McNeil. Marte's on his way out anyway. I think we should dangle J.D. Martinez for a ball club that's in the race to win now, you know, because he can definitely be a great asset to a team. It's kind of like when Tommy Pham was hitting like a machine last year and we were unable to produce as a team, and he ended up getting traded, you know, because he was doing really well. And he, I don't know, I just can't figure it out. Can't figure it out. But I think we should have an ultimate fire sale and start from scratch, you know. That's what I honestly think, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I think what you should do is bring up those guys from AAA, or bring up the best players that are performing in the minor leagues and just bring them up and say, hey, listen, this is your time to see what you can do. Don't worry, we're not going to send you back down. We want you to get experience in the majors. We have nothing to win. We have nothing to lose. We already lost the season. So come, Luis Angel Acuña, come up here, see what you can do. Yeah. You know, whatever other guys you have, I can't think of the names off the top of my head.
Mauricio needs to
Mauricio,
come as soon as possible.
When he comes back from his ACL
injury. Yeah. As soon as he's ready, please come upstairs and let's play. Let's play baseball.
So it's gonna suck as a fan watching it because you know your team is not gonna win the game.
No, it's not about that for me.
But who cares?
I love watching the youth play and develop. I love that. Let me explain something to you. I'd rather have a team of young guys trying to figure it out. So it kind of shows me what the future is gonna be like. You know, right now I don't see a future for the Mets. Not with this, old core. You know, I can't see it. I'd rather see the youth come up and play and develop. You know, I'd rather see that because I can see the future from there. I can't see the future right now at all. So, That being said, how about those Baltimore Orioles?
Baltimore Orioles, so they had a week of they were on the road. The first trip, first leg of the trip was St. Louis and Chicago. The series I want to talk about is the St. Louis. So they had a three-game series against the Cardinals. The first game, they played six innings, and then the game got suspended because it was pouring crazy. And so they ended up playing the day-night doubleheader on the last game of the last game of the series. And, going into that first game, in that first game that got suspended, Orioles had momentum. They were doing well. They're pitching well. It was a tie game, and, I think they left with, a man on second when they got suspended. I was like, all right, they're probably going to win this game. And they lost the middle game in series. They lost the middle game. And then on the last day is when the wheels just fell off. They ended up in the makeup, in the suspended game. It was tied when it got started. St. Louis took the lead in that suspended game, and they never looked back. The game that really bothered me the most was the second game, which John Means pitched. He had a great game. He was pitching well, but they took him out, obviously. So they had a 3-0 lead in that last game, and Baltimore, they just had two massive errors. And one of the errors cost them inside the park home run. And St. Louis ended up winning 4-3, and I was furious. Nothing worse than having a lead all the way through the game and you just completely blow it. It was more so not so pitching that messed up. It was just fielding, just bad plays by Gunnar Henderson. He overthrew the guy, and then the other guy threw it, and he threw it into center field, and the guy for the Cardinals was able to get inside the park home run, and they lost, but they ended up rebounding. They ended up going to Chicago. Chicago White Sox are the worst team in the majors. So they were able to sweep them, but I got a little worried. They are running into some injuries. John Means is out. Grayson Rodriguez just came back from the IL. Kyle Bradish just came back. Dean Kramer's back on the IL. So they have some injuries in the pitching department. That was always my red flag for that team is how good is their pitching. When everyone's there, they're great. It's like the Mets a couple years ago when DeGrom, Matt Harvey and Noah Syndergaard, when they were all playing, they were a really good team. They're good pitching staff.
Good staff.
But once they all start getting hurt and blah, 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 they were just ineffective. And the team, team was scoring runs, but the team, the pitchers couldn't, pitch well. So that's the case here with Baltimore. They're producing runs. It's just they're not holding leads, and then you put your bullpen in a tight situation. And Baltimore really needs a closer. Kimbrough's been god-awful. So I don't know what they're going to do. Thank goodness it's a one-year deal. But they're not going to get their closer back until next year. So I don't know who they're going to trade for. My opinion, what I would do is I put Yunior Cano in the closer role and make Kimbrough your setup man. Cano is really good. He throws fast. He's not like Felix Bautista, but that's what I would do to fix that situation. But like I said, they're winning. So, you're not going to win every series. There's going to be times in the season where, your team goes into a spunk. It just, the thing is what happens if it continues to go in a spunk, But I think they'll be okay. I'm not worried. Like I said, we're still a quarter of the way through the season, a third of the season. So we shall see. But with that being said, there's two hot teams that we want to talk about. The hottest team right now is the Kansas City Royals, man. They've been on fire.
Yeah, welcome back to the Major Leagues. You know, they were really great a while ago. Like, remember, they took the World Series from the Mets in 2015, and they seem to be right back to, you know, that state of mind. They're feeling good. And what really upsets me about that team is that Seth Lugo is their ace on that team. Okay, this is a guy that played for the Mets for eons. And he started out, you know, in the middle of the rotation. Then they moved him to the bullpen and they kept him there. And once they let him go, people realized that he's a starter and he has the capabilities of being a really good starter and a top of the rotation starter, right? Man, these KC Royals, they're surprising everybody. This is a team that won 56 games last year, okay? And they didn't do much. And they only spent like $110 million in the offseason. And, you know, they put a couple of pieces together to complement what they already had. And with the arrival of Bobby Witt Jr., they've been electric. And I like to see things like that. You know, it shows you that you don't have to spend a lot of money to be competitive. You know, this GM, whoever he is, salute to you, you know. I don't know. It's pretty crazy. So you have to understand that this team doesn't, you know, they have certain things about them that, so whoever's training and, you know, putting them together and watching them on a daily basis, it's really working out for them. They have one of the lowest strikeout rates in baseball. All right. So they go up to bat and they're really hard to, you know, put out. All right. They don't hit a lot of home runs either. But despite that, they're 11th in the most runs scored in the majors, which is pretty crazy. A team that doesn't hit home runs, but you have to understand they don't strike out a lot. All right. That's where it's at. All right. Every at bat is super important to them. This is what they focus on. The little things. And they've been able to, you know, put together a really good season. And I like seeing stuff like that, you know. I hate them for, you know, taking a championship away from the Mets, especially, you know, when we had that amazing run in 2015. You know, we swept the Cubs. They were doing really well. We went through, you know, it was a great postseason. Then we got to the World Series, and we won, I believe, one game. I can't remember exactly what the numbers were, but I think, you know, they ran through us. They ran through us like we were a minor league club. And you know, Bobby Witt Jr. is an amazing player, and he can only get better, but he's not the type of player that has to carry this team. You know, not everything falls on his shoulders, and this is probably why he's able to, you know, produce. And we're talking about a player that's hitting 264. I wish half of my players were hitting 264. You have to understand that. And he has 12 stolen bases, right? So he's super fast. He's hitting well, right? And his strikeout rate is impeccable. It's at like a 14%. So what are we talking about? We're talking about an amazing team here, right? It's an all-star cast, right? And when you see a player like Seth Lugo reinvent himself and say, I am a true starter, and he has an 8-1 record with 72 innings pitched, right? 14 earned runs in 72 innings pitched. That's crazy to me. 15 walks with an ERA of 1.74. That's disturbing. That's how good he is. This guy was sitting in Queens all this time, and when we had pitching problems, we never looked at him. That's disturbing. You know? But whatever. You know, it is what it is. Sometimes players have to move and, you know, go into a different environment to be able to succeed. Some places don't work for all players. New York is hard to play in, but I don't think they ever really gave him a chance, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely it's exciting. You know, when you think of teams that go on a nice winning streak like that, you would think that, wow, they must have hit a lot of home runs, because today's game is all about hitting home runs, and that's how most runs are produced. But the Kansas City Royals, they play small ball. They hit the ball in the gaps. They make the small plays. They steal when they need to. They put pressure on the pitching staff with, you know, certain things that they do. So that's the old school baseball. I like it. Makes it more exciting, puts more pressure, and it makes it harder for the team that the Kansas City is facing to defend them, you know, because, if you know all you have to do is defend the guy from hitting home run, well, how do I defend the guy from hitting home run? Don't constantly throw pitches down the middle, you know what I mean? Or if you know if Bobby Witt Jr. is the only one that's mashing home runs for that team, then you just be like, all right, well, I just won't pitch to him, and I'll pitch around everybody else. But even with him hitting home runs, it's not at the level, you know, you would think they are. But it's what it is. It's exciting. So the another team that's in the division that's really exciting to talk about, I would like to talk about, is the Cleveland Guardians. They're in first place in the AL Central. And they also had a so Kansas City just finished a 7-game winning streak, and Cleveland just had a 9-game.
To be exact, it was eight.
Eight for Kansas City.
Yeah.
And the Guardians just had a 9-game winning streak snapped. But in those 9 games, they're scoring an average of 6 runs per game. This was their longest winning streak since 2017, when they had a 22-game winning streak. And this is the first time that first-year manager Steve Vogt has had a winning streak like that. The last guy to have a winning streak in this first year as manager was Alex Cora of the Boston Red Sox. So it's going to be a tight race in that division to have Kansas City and Cleveland at the top. And also Minnesota's not that bad, you know. So with Kansas City and Cleveland playing where they are, you know, whoever wins that division, they're going to get a bid at the ALDS, and the other team, they could either lose out or be one of the wild card teams. So I don't know how long they can keep that toe-to-toe race, but if they can, man, it's going to be a fun season in Kansas City and Cleveland for sure. You know, and I, you know, going into the season, I didn't think Cincinnati was going to be that good. I just, you know, they've been, what, 5, 6 plus 7 years removed from their World Series win in 2015. And they were kind of on a rebuild, but the rebuild has happened very quickly, similarly to how the Orioles rebuild has gone. Same thing with Houston a couple years ago, and same thing with Chicago a couple years ago, and Atlanta a couple years ago. So they've managed to shorten the rebuilding process, and by doing that, I guess that's the plus side of having analytics, is that you have scouts who knows how to pick players based on their numbers and not based on their numbers, and it's worked. And if you get the right players that fit your system, that fits those numbers, then you can be successful. And like I said, the only big star player that I think of on Kansas City is Bobby Witt Jr. And obviously Seth Lugo, he's their starter. And, you know, they got AJ Melendez. He's good. He's the outfielder. The Kansas City teams I think of when they won was Lorenzo Cain, Eric Hosmer. You know, the name goes on. And they had, what's his name, James Shields. You remember him? They came over from Tampa Bay.
Didn't they have Moustakas too?
Like, Moustakas, the first baseman. You know, so they had a really good team. And they still have Salvador Perez in Kansas City. He was there in 2015. You know, Salvador Perez is near the end of his career, but he's been carrying that pitching staff very well. And I think having a good catcher helps your pitching staff. They're able to control the ball and things like that. But in that for Cleveland, going back to Cleveland, in their 9-game winning streak, the averaging scoring was about 6 runs per game. So that's pretty impressive. That knowing that when you go into a game, if you're a fan of that team, like, all right, there's a good chance I'm going to score more than 3 runs in every game that they're going to play. So they've had a good pitching staff. Their offense has been producing. Jose Ramirez has been fantastic for them. You know, he's their superstar. They have former Met Andrés Giménez doing well for them.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I know. It brings that, back that hurts some too. Old that wounds. Hurts too.
Exactly. You know, we got rid of Giménez and Amed Rosario, right? We gave him 2 shortstops for this guy, and then we ended up extending him for a lot of money. And a lot of it is deferred as well. And I don't see it anymore. I could have. definitely been happier with Jimenez staying there and producing the way he is without having to spend all that money, you know? So, like, it shows once again that, you know, you're spending money on these flashy guys and you're not thinking about the future. Jimenez is the future of the game. But what can I say? It's too late now, right? It's too late now to worry about things like that. We have to figure out how to right the ship now. But that was definitely a mistake on the Mets' part.
Yeah, so we're nearing the end of the show. So one thing we like to do on the show is we like to point out the best hitter of the week and the best pitcher of the week. So with that being said, who is our hitter of the week?
Well, our hitter of the week is going to be Dylan Moore of the Mariners, right? He went 3-for-4 with 2 home runs, 4 RBIs against the mighty New York Yankees. Definitely a good day for you, sir.
Yeah, and in that game, because of his production, that was only one of the games that they were able to take. They only took 1 out of 2 games from the Yankees, and, you know, the Yankees have been really good this year. So anytime you can get a win from them, it's a win. You know, it's good for your team.
Definitely.
And he produced well. So, you know, Seattle's, you know, going into the season, Seattle was one of the favorites to win the AL West. They were set to be competing with Houston, but Houston's kind of fallen off the radar a little bit. Texas Rangers, they're kind of hobbling their way through, waiting for their star pitchers to come back, DeGroms and Scherzers.
Yeah.
So they're having the World Series curse in the sense that the next year they just kind of underperformed. But I wouldn't be surprised if Seattle wins that division. I think they're a good team. They got a good young core. They got this guy Moore, and they also have, you know, Julio Rodriguez, who's one of the best outfielders.
J-Rod,
he's been great. So I was watching a game last night, actually, because they're playing the Astros, and they looked really, really good. They're a small power hitting team, or not power hitting, but, you know, small ball. You know, so it'll be interesting. And then our gunslinger of the week is going to be Baltimore's Kyle Bradish. In that game against Chicago, he pitched 7 innings, 11 Ks, 4 walks. No runs were given up. And they ended up and that was a game when they took him out. He was he had a no-hitter, but they took him out, and then the relief pitcher came in and gave up a run, and that was the end of it. So I was kind of frustrated. I was like, all right, you should have just left him in. But Kyle Bradish, he just came back from major injury last year. He was hurt again this year. So they're doing the right thing. They got to play it cautious.
Yeah,
that's why they took him out. Yeah, it stinks. You know, the days of a guy. The last guy to throw a no-hitter was Max Fried, and that was like a month ago for Atlanta. And he went over 100-plus pitches. But, you know, Max has been around longer. He's a little bit older than Kyle Bradish, so that's why they let him do it. But someone like Kyle Bradish is, in my opinion, not just saying that as a homer Orioles fan, is could be a true number one ace. So it was a good performance. They end up winning the game. But anyway, you have some questions for me?
Of course. You know, there's always a trivia question for you, Lasha. And this week, I'm going to give you a hard one. This is going to be – I think you can figure this out because you're so good at this. But let's see. So a former Dodgers pitcher, Fernando Valenzuela, I remember watching him pitch. He was short, stocky, and he was like a David Wells type of dude, you know what I'm saying? That type of stature. For those guys that, you know, are young in the game and don't understand who Fernando Valenzuela was, he was a great asset to the Dodgers back in the day. I actually remember watching him pitch, and he was so good. I was young, but I remember him. He stood out to me. And he was really famous for throwing a certain type of pitch. Do you remember what that pitch was?
So I'm going to go with the pitch that a lot of pitchers don't throw anymore. And the ones that did do it, they were really exceptional at it. So I'm going to go with the knuckleball because it's one of the hardest pitches to throw. So my guess would be the knuckleballer. And what years was it that he pitched?
Oh, man, I have to look that up, but we can do that for you right now. But you're wrong, by the way, and it wasn't the knuckleball. It was the screwball.
Ah, I forgot the good old screwball. Those are real tricky.
Yeah, those are really tricky, right?
That's the type of pitch. It just dances all over the place. It looks like a curveball, but it's not. It looks like a fastball, but it's not. And yeah, it really throws hitters off.
Yeah, it's a really weird pitch. So he pitched, right? He played in the league for 17 years, right? And from 1980 to 1991 and then 93 to 97, he played for six different teams. Right? He played for the Dodgers. And he had a pretty decent record. His 173... and 153, so 173 wins, 153 losses, right? He was pretty amazing. You know, I remember this guy as a young buck watching him. And, you know, he's definitely appreciated out there. He was the type of player that, you know, gave you your all. This is back in the day when Tommy Lasorda was managing the Dodgers. That's how far back we're going. That's pretty crazy, right?
Yeah, that's pretty amazing that you know, a lot of players don't have those type of pitches. Most players now throw fastball, changeup, those and the slide. Those are the three main pitches. The reason why I said the knuckleball, because, you know, that's not a common pitch anymore, and that was a dangerous pitch too.
That's a dangerous pitch too, yeah.
Because the best guys were there. It's funny, the only ones that could really throw knuckleballs are the guys that could throw sidearm, where basically your knuckles are scraping the ground as the pitcher releases the ball to the plate. And you know, the rest in peace to one of the greatest at it was Tim Wakefield.
Yes,
so that's why that's why I thought. But for a guy like that, I'm not surprised that he was able to throw a screwball like that, because, you know, he's small, so he's got to be able to control the ball, you know.
Yeah, this guy, he was pretty crazy. In 86, right, when the Mets won, he was able to win the league-leading 21 games, yo. That's crazy, right? In 86, he was the best pitcher. 21 games. Pitchers don't even come close to that anymore.
No, they don't.
That's pretty crazy, right? This is how good he was, right? And I believe they won the championship. The Dodgers won the championship in 88, I believe. He was part of that club. That's pretty impressive, you know? He was so good. You don't see players like that or pitchers like that anymore. I mean, I think the last time a pitcher won 20 games, well, I remember this because I'm a Mets fan, but what's his name? R.A. Dickey won 20 games that year, but he had that tricky, it was a knuckleball, right? And this is when
Yeah,
it was a knuckleball. I believe it was. And R.A. Dickey had a fantabulous year with the Mets that year, right? And they ended up trading him to Toronto for Travis d'Arnaud, and we ended up getting Syndergaard in that package. But, you know, to win 21 games in a season, that's man, that's really hard to do. So salute to Mr. Fernando Valenzuela. And I can't believe I stumped you, because you're so good at this. You came close, because the knuckleball and the screwball, you know, those are the pitches that are really interesting and nobody really uses anymore. But we're coming to the end of the show, and want to say thank you for listening, and we'll be back really shortly. And I think we had a good week last. You know, we had a really interesting episode a couple of days ago, and we were talking about the deferred contracts and all this madness is going on out there in the major leagues. And I think we had a really interesting episode. I enjoyed it. This was fun. And we'll see you on the next one for sure.
Yeah, sounds good, man. And we'll talk soon. And we should hopefully have a new special.